You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is David Bryan, and this is Curiosity Invited, a podcast inspired by endless curiosity. Tune in for an open-minded conversation about interesting and important things. Hello, and welcome to Curiosity Invited. My name is David Bryan, and today I have the great pleasure of speaking with Luthern Williams. Luthern is a visionary educator and is the head of New Road School, a place near and dear to my heart, a school in Santa Monica, California. Luthern holds a bachelor's from University of Pennsylvania and an educational master's in school leadership from Harvard University. Luthern is deeply committed to democratizing meaningful access to high-quality education for socioeconomically disadvantaged students and to developing schools built on well-being that are catalysts for social transformation. So it's my great pleasure to welcome and thank Luthern Williams for being on Curiosity Invited. Thank you so much for agreeing to speak, Luthern. It's good to see you. Truth in Advertising, I should tell everybody that we are friends. I already told them all of your accomplishments and where you are right now. I did not say, however, that I was the founding head of New Road School, and after I left in 2013, there was another fellow who took over, and happily, this fellow, Luthern Williams, took over 2 years after that, and I'm super pleased about that. And good to see you. And I know you're busy, and I really appreciate you devoting this time to this conversation. And I'll let you know this can be as formal or conversational and exploratory as you want. So we'll start and we'll see where we go. And so I'm probably going to ask you questions that I know what you think about. So, it's not the fact that my hair is gray and that I've lost my memory. It's that I want to make sure other people get to hear your voice about certain things. So the first question I have is you read that bio and here you are talking about a school with love and respect, and it's like, so I get the respect and I get the dignity and I get the academic excellence. It's like, but you know, as Tina Turner might ask, what's love got to do with it? I mean, it's school. I know that's important to you. Why is it important in education?
Well, it's interesting, David, and thank you for having me. I remember when I first interviewed at New Roads, and I met all of these various people. And I remember after that day, I had a conversation with a friend of mine, and I said, I heard the word love used several times at this school. And I was in tears. And I was in tears because I realized that I'd never heard the word love used in my own education, not in all of the years that I had been in education. And
you mean both as a student and as a person working in education?
Yeah. No, and not at all. Never heard it. Mm-hmm. I never thought that love belonged in schools. I didn't even think, what would that even mean? And I think I've come over time to understand what it means at New Roads. And part of it means sort of being able to hold space and to allow people to show up as who they are authentically, and to take off their mask, to take off their armor, to invite them to be who they are, which I think is profound. I don't think most of us find ourselves in spaces where we can do that.
Yeah, I will say, I hope this isn't just nostalgic, but I will say that aspect of education, that piece, inviting people to show up as themselves, was probably the, I mean, if I had to identify one thing that mattered most when I was there, was exactly that. And if I had to identify the one thing that I think made the school feel so welcoming and comfortable and energized and well-meaning and all of those positive adjectives, it was that folks felt invited to show up as exactly that, who they are. And that was at least back then, and I suspect it's kids, so it always will be. It was zany and fun and and serious, and you know, real emotions in the, I mean, do you think that has that piece of it has an effect or contributes in some way to academic performance?
I think it has a profound impact, David. I think when you guys started the school, I don't think the research had really caught up to education. And I think now it's clear that the diversity of the students really has a huge impact on all of the outcomes of kids, even in terms of, you know, how deep they think critically, you know, whether they're creative problem solvers. And I think the piece that, you know, of kids being able to show up as who they are, you can't really leverage that diversity unless you're in an environment where kids feel like they're able to show up as who they are.
So could you say something about what you mean by diversity here? Because are you pointing at ethnic, racial diversity primarily? You know, the thing that, depending upon where you are, either has a positive valence or a negative valence, because we, after all, live in the years of culture wars, where diversity is a bad word in some places and otherwise. But is that what you mean, or do you mean the full diversity of human experience that shows up in a young person?
Well, and I think you know what I mean, which is, I think it's the diversity of human experience. Started out with you guys making a commitment to socioeconomic, racial, and cultural diversity that was reflective of the city, because how are these kids gonna, you know, learn how to accept the full spectrum of humanity if they don't start by living and learning together? And I think what that did was create this environment in which all kinds of diversity started to emerge, mm-hmm. and people felt supported in being who they are. So I think that the diversity at New Roads is diversity of all kinds. Even diversity in terms of ideology, perspective, ideas. I mean, I think the kids have this unusual ability to be able to be respectful of one another, even if they disagree, or even if they don't initially see that they share some commonality. If we're in a conversation, and essentially, I think, you know, education inquiry is about, you know, going on a journey together. You know, that journey is going to be much more complex and much more interesting if we both are sharing our perspectives. Mm-hmm. And I think you can imagine that amplified in a classroom where you have kids who are comfortable enough to share their perspective that's built on their experience, their lived experience, and the different ways that they go at solving problems. So you're becoming more expansive in that experience. The people who are being exposed to various points of view, they're having to question their own assumptions about themselves, about others, about the world. And that becomes a constant process. So it becomes a habit where you are intellectually open, because everything you thought was so solid and you thought was so clear may not be so clear.
Mm-hmm. Well, you made reference to schools, education, both your own education and the places you worked at. And what do you think those places would think of the place that you are guiding right now as the head of the school? I mean, is there a sense do you have a sense that more and more educators, more and more schools we sort of look at what you're doing and say, yes, that is just really interesting and excellent, or what the hell are those guys doing? Like, what are they, why are they wasting their time doing this, that, or the other thing?
That we're living in an age where the industrial model of education, where one size fits all, is breaking down. It's not working. And I think that that became even more obvious during the pandemic. And so I think that people are looking for different answers for how do we educate kids in a way that's built on well-being and allows them to reach their full potential. So I do think that there are more places that are looking to places like NeuRose to say, what have you guys been doing? We considered that alternative at the beginning, but maybe this is not alternative. Maybe this is the way education needs to be. So I do think that there is a shift.
There was a point in your career where you were the director of diversity. Windsor School?
Yeah.
I don't really know much about, but I'm assuming back then the diversity that, well, maybe it's still the same, but the diversity that people were pointing at was ethnic, racial, cultural, whatever. And it seems like you have, you now, and NeuRose generally, right, have a bigger take on that, have a bigger perspective about what that means. And could you talk about that a bit? There's a ringing in my phone as well.
Well, I think there's something really interesting about NeuRose, and I credit you in part for this, which, you know, I remember talking to one of the African-American alums from NeuRose who said that you extended humanity to everyone. And allowed everyone to see their own humanity. And I think that, you know, I think NeuRose to me is built on this whole idea that, you know, everyone is worthy of respect and dignity. And I think the old model of diversity is it's something that, you know, is something you begrudgingly do because it's the right thing to do, but not that it actually has value. Mm-hmm. And I think from the very beginning at NeuRose, diversity was considered to have essential value that would add to the learning environment for everyone. And I think that that's still very true today.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'd like to sound like a genius.
Maybe you are. Maybe.
Wait. I know the truth, and my wife really knows the truth. I think the impetus when we began was, I'm not ashamed of it, but the impetus when we began was more a moral, a socio-moral impetus, right? It's like, it's just not fair. Mm-hmm. That the resources are distributed in this way. And so the effort to open the doors to more families who could not afford what independent schools had to charge just to keep the lights on, right? That was the model. It was like inviting diversity because of social justice reasons, right? And I think you're right. Maybe this is my genius, right? I learned.
Speaking true.
Yeah, I learned instantly, almost instantly, certainly in the first year, really by walking around and listening to the conversations among children, among kids, middle school kids, that were in many cases as if not more sophisticated than the conversations I was having when I was teaching, you know, seniors ready to go off to college, or even young people in college in their first couple of years of college. And here were middle school kids having on their own conversations about those things. And was like, what the hell's going on here? And I think it was, you know, what you said a little while ago, it was, having that mix of points of view that you never got in a much more homogenous world, just it was like, oh, we have to up our game here, right? I mean, these kids with this formula, it wasn't that the kids were so brilliant, which they were, right? But it wasn't that they just were, oh, these are, we've cherry picked for the most brilliant kids in Los Angeles. We didn't have that option. But these kids being together and being invited to be who they were was like, you put the ingredients in and it was like, oh, wow, this is really interesting. So I wish I had known that before starting, but I learned it pretty quickly. And I think you're right. And I know you're right that the research sort of caught up, right? And now it's wonderful that there's a bunch of evidence that suggests, look, there's a real, you know, all that stuff you guys say you care about. I don't mean you, I mean educators, you know, academic excellence and yeah, rigor and intellectual curiosity and all that. It is affected by, it is enhanced by diversity of all sorts. Mm-hmm. So as you've both embraced and built on that idea of diversity, what do folks say? I mean, do you get any pushback from communities that are sort of just catching up with diversity means making sure that that the identity groups that we're all familiar with are represented? Do you get any like, you guys are going too far too fast? You're not emphasizing the right things. We should be talking about race. We should be talking about ethnicity. We should be talking blah blah blah.
Well, I think you know, David, that I think it's been tough in these polarized times.
Yeah.
To hold on to a vision of a school like New Roads, because I think fundamental to my conception of New Roads is it's based on the encounter of people who are different with one another. And they are inevitably going to bump into one another and make mistakes with one another, and that's where the learning begins. I think we live in a world where it's very difficult for people to have the grace to allow others to make mistakes and to assume best intention and to turn that into a moment or opportunity for growth and learning. And so I think New Roads is, in my mind, built on that, which is very difficult in this day and age.
A kid may make a remark that is considered a microaggression or racially insensitive, gender insensitive, you know, and be insensitive in some way. And developmentally, if you're talking about a ninth and 10th grade boys, this is exactly where they are. You know, they think things are funny until they know they're not funny. Mm-hmm. And that part of what we're doing is human development there. Mm-hmm. And to me, the accountability is sort of saying, okay, let's figure out how this landed for that other person. And let's figure out how it is that you can accept responsibility for how it landed on this other person. And hopefully you can sort of think about how you can be more mindful in your actions and your words, you know, because it's a different story to me if you intentionally hurt somebody versus someone who is unaware and who needs to grow and develop, which I think is the case for school-age children.
Do your parents and teachers have to be brought along in that?
Not everyone agrees with it. And I think it, you know, I think it goes back to what, you know, does social justice require? And for me, social justice is about an evolution of consciousness. And how do you get to that evolution of consciousness where people are mindful of their words and mindful of their actions, and they make choices and think about the impact those choices have on other people? To me, that's kind of what we're trying to teach the kids. I'm not trying to give them a script of what's politically correct and say, you need to follow this. I'm trying to get them to be free so that they are not just automatically doing things that they're not even conscious that they're doing.
What happens with when teachers come in? Because, you know, teachers come, they come from different places where that may or may not be the attitude. And then they come into this odd environment. I mean, I know you made, at least in the bio, there's reference to professional development, both professional development, but also the, you know, the, for lack of a better term, onboarding of new teachers. The teacher shows up and you think this is a great math teacher and come on in and yada, yada, yada.
Well, I think it's really hard to get it right at New Roads because it is such a unique culture. You know, I think that the school is, you know, very layered, and I think you have an initial impression of it. And I think that deepens over time. I think that part of the professional development we ask people to do, and I think it goes back to what you guys said in the mission, which was basically that parents need to grow and learn in order to treat the young accurately and wisely. Mm-hmm. I think that's true of the teachers as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that what we ask the teachers to do is not only sort of give them the tools of professional development, but to ask them to really think consciously about themselves and to self-examine and to think about how they need to continue to evolve in order to serve these kids. Mm-hmm. And I think for some people, they don't want to do that. It's a place that constantly asks all of us to be in a state of evolution.
And does that include you?
Yes. It includes me 100%.
Are you willing to speak about that?
Yeah. I mean, I think that.
What have you learned since you've been there?
Oh my God, I've learned so much. I think it is a community that is deeply intellectual, but also I think moved by the heart. And there's a way in which I myself have had to crack open and share very sort of intimate parts of myself with the community at different times because they needed to connect with me in that way in order for me to be able to lead the community. And that's at times been very hard for someone who grew up very, you know, work is this and family is this, and there are clear lines between the two. And again, I had to show up as who I authentically was, and I didn't have the luxury of hiding behind my role. Mm.
The other term that shows up when you talk about New Roads, in addition to love, which is such a rare and important conversation in education, but so rare to hear it, is well-being. Mm. And so what do you mean by that? Why do you think that's important? And how do you address that?
Well, I think that I'll start with the last part first, which I think it's built into and has always been built into the school. The idea that we're not teaching disembodied brains and that we're teaching whole human beings. So if a kid's having a bad day, a bad social day, that can easily come into the classroom and not only affect that student, but affect other students. And we care about the environment that's created in the classroom, and we care about that student. And so you have to look at them as full human beings with social, emotional needs that impact the learning, and that it's all integrated. You know, it's clear, you know, from a neuroscience perspective that that's true. You know, but I think education is especially as we go through the years from K-8 to high school, I think it becomes more and more compartmentalized. It becomes more that the kids aren't treated as though they're human, and that people think they only need to fill their cognitive needs. Mm-hmm.
And does that? I mean, is there something in the curriculum that addresses that, or is it in the approach that you encourage teachers to take? Or,
well, I think it's a both and, David, because it's like we've now start to talk about the pedagogy at New Roads as sort of, you know, teachers as empathic facilitators of human development. That basically they are there, that the subject matter is a means to human development. And I think in the pedagogical approach, It's that being present for the kids. It's being aware of the social emotional environment that's created in the class. Is that optimal for learning? What are you bringing into the class? You know, and how is that impacting the social emotional field for the learning? So the kids practice counsel from the time they're in kindergarten, and they learn what now I call the five intentions, because you were the one that alerted me to one of them. And I actually have incorporated it and ask everyone to do that, you know, but, you know, speak from the heart, listen from the heart, be lean, be spontaneous, and invite complimentary and contradictory views, you know? And so I think our students learn to practice that from the very beginning.
One can imagine, right, that elementary school and maybe moving towards middle school, you know, there is at least more conceptual space in people's minds for lack of a better term, for warm and fuzzy. Mm-hmm. And then you've got high school, and now folks are thinking about, well, high school, you know, they've got to take those SAT exams, and they've got to get through algebra 2 and chemistry and yada, yada, yada. And it's at least the popular understanding of things is that, warm and fuzzy is fine, but, you know, you got to learn to speak Spanish and do well on the bubble exams. And by the way, you have to get to AP calculus or whatever the hell it is that people are, right, that stuff they carry around. So how do you get the high school teachers and kids to sort of to incorporate that same attitude? How do the teachers do that?
I think it's
how you do that.
I think that the teachers are definitely on a continuum, and I think it's a work in progress in the high school, because we have people who are incredibly bright as teachers who are devoted to the subject matter. And I think that part of the professional development we do, because we do a lot around the neuroscience and interpersonal neurobiology in terms of helping them understand the connection to optimal learning. Mm. That these things actually contribute to how well and how deep and how enduring the learning will be. So I think that's always back to, you know, for the teacher, it's like, why? It's like, yes, your primary task, even if you see your primary task as learning, how do we optimize the learning? And the well-being is at the foundation of that. Mm-hmm. And even in terms of, you know, giving the kids, you know, wellness breaks in class to recharge their brains. We know that their brains need to recharge after about 20 minutes, you know, and that they will be much more attentive and alert. A wellness break can look like anything the teacher is comfortable with. Sometimes it's playing music. Sometimes it can be meditation. Sometimes it can be just stretching. Sometimes it can be just allowing for a walk. You know, it is really an opportunity for them just to reset.
And is that built into in many classes or in all classes, whatever?
That is what we're building toward in the high school. We've committed to building it into practice. And so we had to say to ourselves, what matters? And we realized it was loving the kids, educating them, and having them still feel connected. And so how could we humanize this medium to promote that connection? And I think that the well-being part grew out of that. It grew out of this sense that their well-being had to be fundamental. I
mean, is this a conversation that is being spoken about in the broader world of education?
Well, I think especially in the National Association, I see there is a clear sense that schools have to do learning differently. And part of that is that well-being and diversity, equity, inclusion have to be central in the model for schools as they move forward. I think that there's always, I think that the struggle that people have, which I think is kind of a false dichotomy between sort of academic excellence and rigor and wellness and diversity, equity, inclusion. I think they are integral to each other and not in opposition to one another. Because if we don't get the mental health piece right and the well-being piece right, then none of the rest really matters. You can't, you know, build a house on a faulty foundation.
So I don't want to put you on the spot here, but I don't want to put you on the spot. That almost sounded like I want to put you on the spot, but I do not. Well-being, wellness, well-being is a bigger term. It's a more encompassing term than diversity, equity, inclusion. So that's that is the umbrella under which other things live. And to the that's got to make you alternatively, you know, celebrated and villainized to take that position, especially in these times. Well, there's almost a, you know, it's almost like diversity, DEI work, diversity, equity, inclusion work, was becoming, maybe still is, a kind of an exercise in gotcha. Right? Like, aha, you know, I've noticed that you, and which, you know, clearly that can't be the goal. That certainly can't be the stopping place. You know, everybody sort of trying to catch somebody else doing something wrong.
Well, it's interesting because I think it's becoming clear, and especially with racism, even with the research that's done, that the perpetrator of racism also is impacted, even on a physiological level, by the racism, you know, and so it's not everyone is impacted negatively by it. And so I think that it really, to me, comes down to well-being and freedom, like that, you know, these things impact all of us. And none of us can truly be free and embrace our full humanity until some of these social constructs are gone.
Do the kids feel that way?
I think yes. I actually think this generation is a very interesting one because in many ways, they are fascinated with labels, but they also reject labels. I see this as a generation that really wants to be called what it wants to be called, you know, at a particular time. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You know, and
oh, that's so yesterday.
I think there's a striving toward, David, a claiming their full humanity and their freedom to become whoever they are. I think that underlying it, that's how I see it, is that they really don't want people to constrain them.
In any group.
In any way.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think that it's, I think a lot of people find it really confusing.
You mean the kids or you mean adults?
No, I don't think the kids, I think the kids are fine with it. They're like, oh, well, this is who you are today. Okay.
Whatever. Right.
I think it's the adults. I think the adults are very confused by it.
You know, I think right from the start, well, maybe this is always the case and, you know, this is just ho-hum, but the kids have always led that piece, right? I mean, you know, they had a much easier time with diversity when we first started the school than their parents did. Much easier. And it was so clear with parents, you know, the kids had an ease with one another. You know, it wasn't perfect, right? I mean, there were events. And I think my attitude back then is very similar to yours in that, you know, the events, somebody rubbing somebody the wrong way, somebody saying something in a way that hurts somebody else's feelings, somebody just being ignorant or insensitive, were up and we sort of dealt with them as these are opportunities. You know, this is not like a hand grenade destroying the place. This is the reason why we want diversity. This is what has to be unpacked and unwound and mm-hmm. and made into something that allows us to grow. Mm-hmm. But the parents didn't necessarily feel that way. You know, there was always the, you know, like those things you find outside used car dealerships, you know, those things that are blown. It's like, oh my God, the sky is falling. Oh, it's like, whoa, calm down.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's become increasingly hard, as I mentioned earlier, in a polarized society.
Yes.
To hold on to that view of education.
You feel like when you look out in the world, do you think the pendulum is moving back in the direction towards embracing difference? Or do you think we're still moving in the direction of more and more polarized?
You know, I think that education has to be clear about what its role is in society and what its role isn't. And for me, I think that, you know, we're in the business of really developing human beings and giving them a space in which they can become and learn how to be good people who hopefully will serve the common good. So, I will continue, you know, as long as I lead New Roads, I will continue to sort of to advocate that. Because I think it's going to be important for our kids to be the kind of bridge builders who can help find common ground if we're going to survive. So that's where my hope resides. My hope resides in trying to help cultivate a generation of kids who can be those bridge builders.
Yeah. Yeah, I think educators, well, maybe not all, but I know it was true for me being around young people, spending my days around young people. Wasn't like I was not exhausted at the end of the day, but I was way more hopeful. It was almost like they saw things. I heard somebody say this and it just seems so right. You know, young people, we look at what's going on. Young people sort of look off to the side and they see all these things that are going on that people aren't talking about except them. And so they're pointing it out. And then as we move towards adulthood, it's like we learn to stay in this lane rather than look at all those other possibilities. And being around kids who are, you know, they ask all those great questions and it's a wonderful, at least it was for me, it made me a more hopeful person. It made me a more optimistic person about the way the world was heading and even in troubled times. Well, you know, I want to give you an opportunity because you and I know the place, right? I mean, I knew it then and I periodically get to go visit. And, but I don't think, and I didn't speak about this in the introduction, I spoke about you. But I want to make sure that people understand, right? I mean, it is, New Roads is an independent school in Los Angeles or in Santa Monica, but Los Angeles County. And you know, nobody has to do much research to know, wow, tuition's really expensive there. Mm-hmm. But it is a unique place. So this is just, you know, this is a school for rarefied kids in a rarefied environment. And sure, good and well for you to talk about all these things, but who the hell can afford all that tuition dollars? So I want to make sure that folks understand that, yes, that is true for many independent schools, but this is a unique place. So I want to give you an opportunity to sort, especially say it in your words, because I don't want to say it in 2013 words.
Well, it's interesting, you know, and David, I think that one of the things, you know, I love about New Roads, and I frequently say this when I talk about it, is to me, in many ways, it feels like a test case for Brown versus the Board of Education, because the integration was such a failure. And still in the 90s, you did not have a school that reflected the socioeconomic, racial, and cultural diversity of Los Angeles that offered all kids a high quality education that was rich in the arts. And I'm very proud of the fact that New Roads was one of the schools to step up to say that, you know, all children deserve this kind of wonderful education and deserve to be able to have that kind of education that will allow them to determine their own destiny. And I think the school has been true to that throughout, no matter what the challenges are. So that, you know, it's always been 40 to 50% of our kids have been on financial aid. And the school forgoes over 30% of its budget to support that financial aid because we don't have the endowment. And the way we've been able to do that is I think we've been able to sacrifice some other things because we walk our talk. I think we believe you need great teachers in the classroom, a great program, and, you know, and we will do the best we can with the facilities we have. But the people are more important than the facilities. And I think that's always been the case. And, so I'm, you know, and I think the faculty and the staff are very proud of the fact that, you know, over a third of our budget goes to financial aid.
So what that means is that some people pay full, some families pay the full tuition and other families pay less than the full tuition. And some families pay very little. And
I think, David, there are families who, you know, who pay, you know, a few hundred dollars a year to go to the school because the assumption is that everybody needs to contribute something. Mm-hmm. But I think, and we have probably a higher percentage of students who would be the equivalent of getting a Pell Grant in college than a lot of elite colleges by proportion, because we devote so much to trying to make sure that especially students whose families make $60,000 or less, that they have an opportunity to get this kind of education because we know it can break cycles of poverty and really open up opportunities to break, you know, generational cycles of poverty and to give students the opportunity to really live their dreams. Mm-hmm. And we also have a significant number of working class families, of middle class families, of upper middle class families, and the very, very wealthy. And that's all by intention and by design. And the board actually we have a dashboard. So when admissions reports their figures for each year, those are part of their reports. Mm-hmm.
And is it important to, so the board is usually comprised, boards of independent schools are often comprised of the largest donors, the most influential. So is there diversity among board members as well? Is it an important feature of the belief attitude of the board to preserve that? I mean, I know, you know, I used to insist that, you know, so because there is an inclination to sort of look, we need more money. Hey, admit more people who can pay. And it was, but the board always held on to that mission. Is it important at the board level still?
Yes. I think a lot of the board members serve the school for the exact reasons that the staff and the faculty do, because they believe in the vision of the world that New Roads embodies. Mm-hmm. And they believe that, you know, that the people at the table should reflect to the extent possible the school. So the diversity on the board is very important. as a value. And also we do a lot of work with the board, which is unusual, where we have, you know, our director of student well-being who does the DEI sits on the governance committee of the board. And we really look at sort of how it is that is our governance practices and decision-making process, is that inclusive? I think that the board is also committed to creating a pipeline, particularly of people who've been underrepresented on boards.
That's great.
For the New Roads board, you know, so that not only to serve on our board, but to be able to serve on other boards as well.
Oh, that's interesting. Wow. That's pretty cool.
Well, I think the last things that, you know, I realized that I hadn't talked specifically about the kids. And one of the things that it just amazes me is every year I write recommendations for college for probably about 3 or 4 of them. And I did this year, they asked me. And I think they don't ask me because they don't think I'm going to say yes, some of them, but I'm like, oh, if you ask me and I know you, I'm, of course I'm going to say yes. And I remember, you know, one of them, you know, he's a musician and he decided that he was going to do an independent study with his English teacher. And his English teacher is an expert on Shakespeare. So he decided to, the teacher assigned him The Tempest, and that he didn't know that The Tempest was a pro-colonial work. And so once he discovered that, then his teacher had him read Aimé Césaire's The Tempest, which is a response to it. And then he decided that he was going to create an album with all of these various genres, including classical and rap, and he learned, you know, several languages and worked with people around the world to create an album, which, you know, became his independent study project.
And wow, that's amazing.
And it was just, to me, a testament to what this environment really is like. You know, and then we had another young woman, and she's someone who's always been a super high achieving student and been in the highest math classes and one of the only girls in some of the high level math classes. And she talked about how, you know, she constantly had to make her voice heard among some of the boys, you know, and that, you know, and to challenge some of their assumptions. And she said that led her to become a part of Feministas, which is a club at New Roads. And she decided to lead that club, but she's a young Jewish woman from an affluent background. And she said, you know, I decided I wanted to read bell hooks, you know, to understand what my role as an affluent white young woman is in the feminist movement and what are some of the obstacles I bring as a result of my lack of consciousness. And I was just blown away by who these kids are. And not only are they just deep thinkers and wonderful human beings, but they're likable people. And and once I had written all the recommendations, I'm like, I really like these people. And I think whenever I get depressed about the world and its condition, I just think of them. And they're my stars, my North Star.
Yeah. Indeed. That's beautiful, actually. Gosh, that sounds so, that's inspiring. Those kids, damn those kids, they're so inspiring.
Well, I think it's interesting, David. I think that's the environment that has been created. I was not a part of my own education. I was simply a robot going through the process.
Yeah.
Engaged.
And do you want to speak at all about your education? You don't have to name names if you don't want to, but you went to, you were in public school, and then your parents moved you into an independent school, private school?
Yeah, I started out in a working class African-American neighborhood in Los Angeles. And my parents soon realized when I was very young and I had 4 siblings that the schools weren't quite, the same on the other side of the valley, which was very affluent. And so they said, we can't afford to send five kids to private school, but we can try to buy a house in that community. And I ended up by high school going to private school, but it was a very, and on a football scholarship, but it was a very traditional private school. It was not New Roads. And I went on, you know, I got a perfectly good education in a traditional sense. It prepared me for college, but I didn't realize that you could be a part of your own educational experience until I actually was in college. And the rest of it was just a matter of enduring it.
It's a rare, I mean, it's growing, I know, but you don't find many African-American heads of school. You don't find many African-American
heads of much.
Administrators, directors in education generally, but you certainly don't find many heads of school who are African-American. And is that a, is that still true? Is there, are you a minority, as it were?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. It's still true. I think California is doing a little bit better than some other parts of the country, but it's still true that African-Americans are definitely a small minority group within the heads of school in the country.
Do you feel it when you feel it is, I don't quite know what I mean by that conversation, by that term, but do you feel it when you go to conferences? You certainly notice it, right? You look around and, hey, hey, which one of these is not like the other, right? But does it have an impact in that?
Well, I think it's part of, you know, thinking about, do I want to be the one to say X, Y, and Z and cause a disturbance, or do I just need to keep my mouth shut today? Do you know? And I think that's how I think I feel it is, is constantly making a choice as to whether I want to raise something that's not being raised.
Right. That's not being raised, and that you understand. The reason, one of the likely reasons it's not being raised is because there is not the same diversity of experience in the room as
that's Richard it. Dinkman. Yes, that's exactly it. And I have to just decide, you know, do I want to take this on right now? Right. Do I feel like I can take this on right now?
Right.
Do I feel like it's going to make a difference?
Right.
What's at stake for me if I do take it on?
Right. You
know, in terms of relationships, I mean, I think,
can people hear it right now?
Yeah, hear it right now. So I think there are all those things that go through my mind. And then I also have, you know, tried to reach out and support other African-American heads who are newer to the job, because, you know, I didn't have that kind of resource. I do now, because I have a really wonderful mentor in Ravita Bowers, but that wasn't the case when I first started.
We have a ways to go in this world.
I think there's a part two here. I think there's a part two.
Think about what part two should include. I always enjoy speaking with you. You know, as I said at the beginning, truth in advertising, we know each other and we're friends. And but think about what part two looks like, and I will as well. And once again, Lutheran Williams, New Road School, a wonderful, I loved that it says a visionary educational leader, because I think that's exactly what you are. And I'm so glad that you are there, even on those days when you're not necessarily glad you're there. And so thank you. Thank you so much for spending time doing this. I really appreciate it. I really do.
You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.